having me. Now let's get into the word. Let's get into the word. So if you got a Bible, go with me to Genesis 35. I'm going to go to Genesis 35. And I want to talk to you for a little bit today, and I hope I can show you this in a way that will help you. Because in Genesis 35, we're gonna look at this character named Jacob. And he was a little bit messed up, right? And God used him. And I think what we do is we tend to put ourselves into categories of useful or useless based on what we do and the things that we struggle with. But hopefully today you'll see, even with all the masks that you wear and all the different identities that you carry, God's not done with you yet. God's not done with you yet. He hasn't left you, and he's not letting go. So we're going to take a look at Jacob, and he's toward the end of his journey here. He's almost 100 years old in Genesis 35, and he's seen a lot of blessings. He's carried a lot of burdens, and he's fought a lot of battles. He's seen it all, and he's done it all. And God gives him the instruction to return to a place that he's already been before. And so I want to take you on this journey, if you will, with Jacob today in Genesis 35, and I'll read verses 1 through 7. God said to Jacob, "Arise and go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau." And so Jacob said to his household and to all that were with him, "Put away the foreign gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments. Then let us arise and go up to Bethel so that I may make there an altar to God who answered me in the day of my distress and had been with me wherever I have gone." So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods that they had and the rings in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the oak tree, which was near Shechem. How many of you know, if you're ever going to go forward, there's some things in your past you have to bury, some things that you can't carry with you. There's some relationships, there's some people that you're going to have to leave behind. You're going to have to bury some things before God can push you forward. And as they journeyed, a terror fell from God upon all the cities that were around them, so they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. Because, see, the people that were in these cities, they recognized the presence of God that was traveling with the people, and they understood that if they wanted to get to the people, they were going to have to go through something first. And they weren't willing to fight that battle. And Jacob came to Luz, that is Bethel, which is in the land of Canaan, and he and all the people who were with him. And see, it was called Luz the first time Jacob went there, but now it's different since it's a return visit. And so while Jacob was there the first time, he experienced something, and he renamed the place where he was based on what he saw when he opened his eyes to the presence of God in that place. And there he built an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God revealed to him himself to him when he was fled from his brother. And so I want to talk to you for a little bit on the subject, when God shows up in the middle of nowhere. When God shows up in the middle of nowhere. And I want to pray, God, we thank you for your spirit that we feel in this place. You know, we know you're already here. God, you're doing something great. You're doing something miraculous in this place. And we want to be tools. We want to be vessels, God, to further your kingdom. God, open our hearts, open our minds, open our spirits. And God, let us be vessels, God, that we can pour out what it is that you're willing to do and you're wanting to do in the earth. God, open our hearts, open our minds, open our spirits, and draw us near to you. In Jesus' name, amen. You can be seated. You can be seated. Casey, thank you for your wonderful playing. And so I want to talk to you today about when God shows up in the middle of nowhere. And I want to minister to you today, some of the people that are here, you're in transition or you're in trouble. Because Jacob was in both of these situations whenever he went to this place that he named Bethel. He was in transition the first time because he comes to Bethel in Genesis 28. He's running from his brother Esau, right? He's running for his life. He's headed to his uncle Laban's house, who he had never met before. And in chapter 35, some crazy family dysfunction that's almost too ridiculous to talk about landed him again, leaving on a journey headed toward Bethel. But this time it's for a return visit. And so I want to speak to you who may be in transition in your spirit, in your soul, in your emotions, about what happens when God shows up in the middle of nowhere. And so before we get into that, show of hands, how many of you like keep stuff on your refrigerator? Like, put, like, magnets, all that kind of stuff on your refrigerator. Show hands real quick one more time. Keep stuff on your refrigerator. Cool. You're the normal people here. I like it, right? And so I want to talk to you about some things that we keep on our refrigerator, right? And so we keep pictures. I mean, we keep those 8 million Christmas cards you get in the mail every year that you never know what to do with after Christmas is over, right? Like, do you throw them away or do you keep them? Like, are they going to be butthurt at you if, like, you don't hang on to it? You never know, right? So you have all of these things that you put on your refrigerator. You have the graduation invitations, the random drawings that you told your kids looked really good, but, you know, let's be honest here. It's probably not amazing. Okay. All right. I'm the only one. That's okay, right? So we all keep stuff on our fridge, and I brought you some stuff that we keep on our fridge just so you can kind of see we're normal too, right? We're not those people where we don't keep stuff in our fridge. And so we got this cool Nashville magnet, and we bought this in Nashville 1 year when we were there for a youth convention. It was around the time of Thanksgiving, and we were kind of walking around. There's this hotel, and there's stuff to do, but we were bored. So we went to, like, the gift shop, and we found this really cool magnet. We're supposed to send this to our dad, but we got this, like, 2.5, almost 3 years ago, and you see where it is. So, you know, it hangs out on the fridge. And some people, we keep, like, pictures. And so this was one of our engagement pictures that Kara took. She's a great photographer. But people keep things like this on their fridge. And we have graduation invitations and pictures. And boss lady's going to like this. This is a little magnet with her new nephew on it when he turned, I think, 1 month old. So we keep this on the fridge, and it's cool. We keep calendars and stuff like that, just so we can know when stuff's happening. And we keep invitations and birthday cards. And this is some of the stuff that we keep on our fridge, right? And show hands one more time. You keep stuff on your fridge. Good, good. And so there was one time where, for work, I went to this guy's house. And normal people, you keep stuff on your fridge. And so I went to this guy's house, and we sat down, and he walks over to the fridge. He's going to get us some water to drink. And he opens up his fridge, and I notice on the front that he didn't really have any pictures of his family. He didn't have any invitations. He didn't have any drawings. He didn't have any calendars. But he had postcards. Postcards, like, of all these exotic places. He's got, like, Paris, France. He's got this random place in New Zealand that's, like, green grass everywhere. Look cool, right? He has, like, Maui. He has all of these fun, exotic places, all these postcards on his fridge. And I thought it was a little bit strange because he has a family. You know, he has kids. But there were no pictures of people or anything like that on his fridge. It's just postcards all over his fridge, all these different relatively exotic places, like the type of place where you want to vacation 6 months twice a year, those kind of places, right? And so where you want to just go and just chill, like you don't want to do anything, you just want to hang out. So I said, man, that's really cool. Like, are all the places you've been with your family, like, are those places you visited? And he's like, no, I ain't never been to any of those places. And I'm like, well, it's a little weird. So why do you have these random postcards on your fridge, right? So I asked him. So I was like, okay, you've never been to any of those places. That's fine. Has any of your family ever been there? Like, I know you have a daughter that travels. Has she ever been to any of those places? Is these places she's been and sent you a postcard from? She's like, no, I don't know anybody that's ever been to any of those places. And so I'm like, well, come on, my guy. Like, what's with the random postcards, right? And he told me something, and it hit me at first, and I had to think about it for a second. But he said, I got these postcards because these are all the places I want to visit one day. Those are all the places I want to go visit one day. He said, he called me son, and it was weird. He's like, look, son, I don't keep my eyes on where I've been. I keep my eyes on where I'm going. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And so he said that, and it hit me pretty hard. And I thought at first that's good, but then I got to thinking about it, and I said, is it really? Because if you don't reflect on and appreciate and enjoy where you've been, and where you are on the way to where you're going, maybe you'll never get there. Or maybe you'll just think that life is all about getting there. And when you finally get there, it doesn't quite feel like what you thought it would. And it doesn't look like what you saw in the commercial. It doesn't look like what you saw on TV. But you're pushing for a place called there. And I thought it was good that this guy had aspirations and he had goals and he had dreams. And that's great. That's great. He wants to travel. He wants to see places. But is there not anything in your life up until this point that was worthy of you putting on the fridge? Like, nothing cool has happened in your life that you want to look back at and say, well, that was awesome, right? So there's nothing. Like, no family pictures, no family functions, no invitations. There's nothing in your life that you can look back on and say, that was really cool. And so I'm glad he's not complacent. That's great. But he's also got to be content while he's not becoming complacent. And this is the part of what drives selfishness and the self-centeredness and the sense of hurry in our lives. Because we're so destination driven. We have to get there. there. We have to get there. It's all about where we're going and what we're going to do. And it's the spirit of our age to want to be anywhere except for where we are right now. We'd rather be anywhere than except for where we are right now. And what can happen in your life is that you become so focused on getting to a place called there that you actually arrive and you don't even know you made it. You can get to a place called there and you can arrive and not even know you made it. And so what if you made it and you don't even know it? What if you got there and you don't even know it? You might be in Paris and you don't even know it, right? You might be in the place of your dreams. You might be in the job that you prayed for and you don't even know it. You might be in the blessing in the season that you prayed for and you don't even know it. You might be living in the overflowing, abundant blessing that God has for you and that you prayed for and that you asked for and you don't even know it. But before I get too deep into that, I want to tell you about a conversation I had with a friend of mine on his 24th birthday. I know it's young and all the older people here, y'all gonna fuss at me a little bit, but that's okay. But we're sitting down at his 24th birthday. We go out to a meal. It's me, Tim, all of our friends that we've had throughout the years. I mean, it's a guy that I've known since we were about in middle school. And so I'm sitting next to him, and it's a great time. Everybody's enjoying themselves. It's good company. And I ask him, well, man, how do you feel? Are you happy? You're turning 24. You know, things are going well for you. How do you feel? And he's like, I guess I feel all right. And I'm like, really? You guess you feel all right? Like, dude, just some context here. He's 24. He just graduated college. He's the first in his family to ever do so, right? He just got the job of his dreams. He graduated college and 2 weeks later had an engineering job. Like, he's had some crazy abundant blessings in his life. And so we're sitting there and we were talking to him, and I'm telling him about all the good things that's happened to him. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I just thought I'd be further along. 24 years old. I thought I'd be further along. I thought I'd have a certain number of zeros in my bank account. I thought I'd have a certain type of wife. I thought I'd have a certain type of house. I thought I'd be in a certain place. I thought I'd be in a certain situation. And it low-key got depressing, right? And so I asked him, I said, let's take a look at the positives. Let's see how far we've come. Like, I know you got the postcards on your fridge. I know you have the places. I know you have the dreams. I know you have the things that you're looking forward to. But let's just take a step back and see how far we've come. If somebody would have told us in middle school that we would be where we are today, we would have looked at them like they were crazy. You graduated college. You got the job of your dreams. You're living it up, right? I just got married not too long ago. I bought a house. Like, if we looked at us, when we were in middle school and said, this is where you'll be when you turn 24, we would have thought they were crazy. But here we are. And look how God's blessed us. Because sometimes you just have to stand in the middle of nowhere, even when you're ultimately believing that where you are is not necessarily where you want to be. Sometimes you have to learn how to praise God, even when you feel like you're getting nowhere and you're going nowhere, when nothing's happening in your life. You have to look at what others have compared to you, and you have to look at it. You say, well, it looks like nothing, but look how far we've come. Have you ever had to thank God in the middle of nowhere? Because that's okay. Some of y'all have been so good all your life that you don't know what I'm talking about. But some of us, we were dead in sin. We were lost in our lust. We were lost in our guilt. We were lost in our shame. And God came in and he snatched us up out of nowhere. He reached into the middle of nowhere and saw where we were and snatched us up and brought us to a higher place. Because sometimes you hear people say, well, I found God. No, you didn't. He wasn't lost. Jesus wasn't lost. He came and he found you. He saw you in the middle of your struggle and he came and found you. He saw you in the middle of your situation and he came and found you. He saw you in the middle of your guilt and he came and found you. And so I read this the other day and it helped me out a little bit, because I'm studying for this, and I read in Genesis 32 and 10 where Jacob was praying one time and he says, I'm not worthy of the least of all the deeds of the steadfast love and all thy faithfulness that thou hast shown to your servant. For with only my staff, I crossed this Jordan. Like, the first time that I came to Bethel, I didn't have anything but a stick in my hand. And now I have become two camps. So he goes back to Bethel. Because Bethel is the place for Jacob where God showed up in the middle of nowhere. And I want to show you how it went down in Genesis 28. So the first time that Jesus goes back to Bethel, because to understand where someone is, you've got to understand where they came from. And so well, Jacob in Genesis 28, he's running from his brother Esau, who wants to kill him, because as we learned in Sunday school when you were a kid, Jacob stole the birthright and the blessing from his older brother Esau, who has guns. So we're on the same page now, right? Cool. So in Genesis 28:10, this is 21 years before Genesis 35, where we read at the beginning. Verse 10 says, Jacob left Beersheba and went toward Haran. And that's an important verse. A lot of people, they'll read that and just move right past it, but that's an important verse because he left his home. He left his place where he was comfortable and familiar with, and he set out for a place that he had never been because he was going to hide out with his uncle Laban, who he had never met, and there's all these unknowns and there's all this mystery. But he sets out on a journey through the middle of nowhere, and this is where he saw God like he'd never seen him before. Did you know that God will show up in the transitional moments of your life? He'll show up in the unsure, in the questionable moments, the how did I get here and where am I going moments. God will show up then. And some of us are in transition today, from high school to college, from college to reality and work and more college, right? Some of us are in transition today. Some of you are in an emotional transition, a spiritual transition, maybe a relational or financial transition. It doesn't matter. God knows how to meet you in the middle of your nowhere. When you don't know where you're going and you can't go back where you came from, God will meet you there with only a stick in your hand and you're all alone because of the things that you've done. Catch that, because of things that you've done, not the things that people did to you. Jacob is where he is because of himself. But God will meet you in the in-between places. And so in verse 11, it says, and he came to a place and he stayed there that night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep. All right, so Jacob is on this journey. He's on the run. It doesn't even say the name of the place of where he stops. It says he stops in the middle of nowhere, an unnamed place up until this point, a place he's just passing through, right? Like, it's a layover. It's like Dallas on the way to somewhere cooler, like Atlanta on the way to somewhere better. It's like a layover, right? The place that he's not planning to stay on very long. It's a brief stop. And you're about to see Jacob have one of the most profound visions of God in the entire Bible. But it happens in the middle of nowhere. See, the sun had set and he gets tired. So he takes some stones and he puts it under his head for his pillow. Now, two things. Terrible for your spine, and he's going to wake up with a migraine. Absolute bad ideas, right? Of all the things, like, I'm assuming, let's hope he stopped in like a forest somewhere. There's not a tree branch or like some leaves you want to stack up. You pick a rock. Cool. Bad ideas. But Jacob, you be great. And so he lays down. He lays down and he has his dream. He goes to sleep in the middle of nowhere with no one, with only a staff in his hand. He doesn't even know where he is, and he has a dream. And he sees in verse 12, and he dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and on the top of it reached down to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord. How many of you know God is always above every situation you're in? And there's always an access point between heaven and earth. There's always an open line of communication between heaven and earth. You're never stuck in a situation with no line of communication, with no help. There's always an access point between heaven and earth. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham and the Father of your father and the God of Isaac. The land which you lie on, I will give to you and your offspring. The place that you're just passing through, the place that you're just passing through, I will give to you as an inheritance and as a sign of the promise, because I am the Lord and I am in this place. In verse 14, it says, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And let me pause right here and just say the reason that God brings you somewhere isn't that so that you can think you're somebody. It's so that you can be a blessing to somebody else. In every situation, you are blessed to be a blessing. And never, ever, ever has it become about any one of us. And he wakes up. In verse 15, he says, behold, I am with you, and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. And then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, whoa, that was awesome, right? That was kind of cool. He said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. I wasn't even planning on stopping here. This wasn't even scheduled. I don't even know where this is. I'm in the middle of nowhere. Verse 17 says, and he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So early in the morning, Jacob took a stone that he had put under his head, and he set it up for a pillar and poured oil on it. Oil represents the presence of God. And he called that place Bethel by the name of the city, which was Luz at first. So Bethel means the house of God and the gate of heaven, though the city used to be called Luz. Like the most weird name, right? It sounds a lot like Luz, nowhere, Loserville, right? Like the middle of nowhere. And in a place where Jacob was just passing through, God made him a promise and revealed his presence, because God will show up in the middle of your nowhere when you're down to nothing and when you have no one, and he say, I'm here with you and I'm here to give you a promise. And so Jacob says, I don't know what this place used to be called, but I know what I'm calling it now. And I'm not calling it Luz. I'm calling it Bethel, because God is in this place. Did you know that you can rename the place you're in based on the presence of God that you feel in that place? You can rename the situation you're facing based on the presence of God that you feel in that situation. Some of us need to take naming rights over the situations that we're facing. Need to stop accepting the situation for what it looks like and start accepting it the way that God sees it. And so Jacob woke up and said, wow, because God met him in the middle of nowhere. And that's Genesis 28, but we didn't read from Genesis 28. I just wanted to give you that so I could show you this. That Jacob went back to Bethel. Jacob went back to Bethel, and this is where the deepest encounter with God happened. See, most of us probably didn't even know that Jacob made a second trip to Bethel. We knew about the first journey, but we didn't really know about the second. So I want to take us back to Bethel with Jacob today. God told him, I'll bring you back to this land that you're lying on, and I'll be with you wherever you go, and I'll fight for you, and I'll bless you. And so 21 years later, Jacob is going back to Bethel. And I want to go back to Bethel for a little bit today, okay? If y'all indulge me here, I want to go back to Bethel for a little bit. Because God is saying to some of us today that we need to go back to Bethel. We need to go back to that place in the middle of nowhere where he met us in our sin, where he met us in our guilt, where he met us in the lowest points of our life. We need to go back. God said, go back to that place in the middle of nowhere where I met you with, where you slept on a rock and you only had a stick in your hand. Go back to Bethel. And I want to give you three things about Bethel today. The first thing is Bethel is a place of remembrance. Bethel is a place of remembrance. It's a place where you remember how God set up shop in the desperate situations of your life and he made a way through the darkness when you didn't know that there would be a way out. When you're going to Bethel, we need to remember some things, right? It's one of the most repeated commandments in the Bible, but often one of the most forgotten. So remember. And so we're always trying to learn something new. But sometimes the key to where we're going and who we are becoming is not necessarily something that we need to learn new, but something we need to remember. And that's what God tells Jacob. He said, I know you're almost 100 years old, and I know you've seen some things. I know you've been through some journeys, but I want you to go back to Bethel. And if you'll give me a little bit of latitude here, I want to take you back on a personal journey. And I knew to kind of convey this message, I'd have to tell some things autobiographically, and I'm cool with that. So you're gonna kind of get the inside scoop to some parts of Mark's life today, if that's all right. And so, you know, I'm a guitar player, so while I'm up here with the worship team and we're worshiping, we're doing our thing, I'm doing two things. I'm worshiping Jesus like I'm supposed to, but I'm also kind of looking around a little bit. So if you ever see me looking around, I promise I'm not trying to, like, invade on your worship space. Don't worry. Just want to connect with you in worship so we can have a moment and embrace Jesus together. That's what that is. And so I'm worshiping Jesus like I'm supposed to, and I'm kind of looking around to see if we can connect with some people and just kind of help somebody. And so In worship, there's some things that I see. There's some faces, there's some people. And sometimes I open my eyes and worship. Sometimes I close my eyes. But when I have my eyes open, I look around and I see my wife up here worshiping, her smile all bright and having fun and singing. And for you, that may just look like her singing and worshiping, but that takes me back to Bethel. That takes me back to the moments where we were 13 years old, and she'll tell you for a fact, she did not like me when she met me. She said I was too short, right? That takes me back to Bethel. It takes me back to those moments where we would stay up all night talking on the phone because she lived 937 miles away. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Why? 937 miles, right? It takes me back to Bethel. It takes me back to the moments where we had to develop a relationship and where we had to develop a love and where a friendship had to develop over time. It takes me back to those times where we didn't agree and Jesus was teaching me patience. It takes me back to Bethel. And it takes me back to those times where I went up there and I asked her, hey, I need you to move you and all of your stuff 937 miles to burning up hot Louisiana where there's only two temperatures and it's hot and it's more hot. Come on down here and let's get married and let's do some fun stuff together, right? And she's like, all right. Okay. But you see the smile, you see her worship, but I see that and it takes me back to Bethel. It takes me back to Bethel. See, I look around and I see guys like Derek Odom. My man Derek's in here. You probably don't know this, but me and Derek go way back. Me and Derek were in campus ministry together, like way back in the good old days, right? When I first got into college, and that's one of the rooms we had. See, I see Derek up here worshiping, and it takes me back to Bethel when they asked an 18-year-old Mark who had nothing to do with ministry and didn't know where I was going and didn't know what I was doing to take over a campus ministry with a leadership team of six people to reach a campus with 30,000. You see Derek worshiping, but it takes me back to Bethel. It takes me back to the moments where I was putting together lessons and sermons and messages, and I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was going to talk about and who I was going to say it to. It takes me back to moments where I didn't know how we were going to reach a campus. You see Derek, but it takes me back to Bethel, where God was developing me when nobody knew my name. See, it takes me back to Bethel. And see, there are times where I'm driving on the road and I'll pass by my high school and I'll think about all the memories there. And if you went by there today, it's Barmore Heights over there on Goodwood. If you went by that school today, you would just see a school. But it takes me back to Bethel. It takes me back to the time during my senior year where God said, hey, bruh, it's time for you to get this right. You're starting a Bible study and I'm not taking no for an answer. And so in the face of adversity, in the face of my peers, the only apostolic voice in a school with 300 to 400 seniors, probably 1,000 total kids, God was going to raise up a voice to be the voice of a generation. And he was developing me when nobody knew my name. You see a school, but it takes me back to Bethel. It takes me back to the times where I had to figure some things out. It takes me back to the times where I was lost and God met me in the middle of my nowhere. And I look out through here and I see my man Aaron Duran sitting over there. And I see him during worship with his arms outstretched, giving it all he's got. And you see him as a worshiper, but it takes me back to Bethel. Because what you don't know is a couple years ago, I was unsatisfied with my job and I didn't know how God was going to use me in the calling that he gave me because my job restricted my time. But Aaron saw an opportunity and took a chance on a guy who was 23 years old and knew a little bit about sales, but not a whole lot. But he got my foot in the door, and God blessed me with a job and gave me opportunities that I would have never thought were available. And now I create my own schedule where ministry can be a priority for me. You see him as a worshiper. It takes me back to Bethel. I see a guy who gave me a prayer journal one day and said, hey, this will help your prayer life. And through that prayer journal, I've seen God revolutionize the way that I pray and the way that I communicate with him. And the intent, we talked about this morning, the intent behind my prayers. You see a worshiper, but it takes me back to Bethel. Is this okay? Is this okay? Because I want to teach you how to do this in your own life so you can go back and you can remember where God brought you from. Because sometimes you've got to look at the places and some people and some situations and remember the things that God has done. And see, I look out and I see my parents who, in the face of like the most tragic adversity ever, the loss of their child, still have their hands lifted in praise to God and giving him thanks and giving him goodness. You see them as worshipers. You see them with their hands lifted, but that takes me back to Bethel. It takes me back to those days where they raised us as kids to be completely and totally dependent on God, no matter what the situation looks like. And see, I'll close my eyes and I'll see my brother Josh, who really got me into ministry, who took me under his wing, and he would ask me questions of accountability because he said, if God's going to use you, and he is, you're going to have to make sure your thought life is right. And see, you just see the pictures of him, but that takes me back to Bethel. And I open my eyes and I look around and I see all of you worshiping, regardless of situation, regardless of need, regardless of where you are in life. I see you worshiping, and that takes me back to Bethel. And I think to myself, surely the Lord is in this place. Surely the Lord is in this place. Because can you just close your eyes for a second and just go back to Bethel? You don't need a platform to do it. You don't need anything crazy. You don't need anything major. Just close your eyes for a second. Just go back to Bethel in your heart. And think about the time that God showed up in the middle of your nowhere. And look back at where he brought you from. Look back over the times where the bills were due and the money was low and you didn't have enough, but you had God, so that's all you needed. Sometimes you just have to go back to Bethel. Go back to that place in that season where, go back to that situation where you didn't think that there was going to be a way out and you're surrounded by darkness and there was no light in sight. Because see, Bethel is a place of remembrance. Because see, Jacob set up a stone. He sets up a stone. And Samuel set up a stone one time in scripture and he said, thus far the Lord has helped us. See, the stone is the marker. The stone marks the place of remembrance. And so go back to Bethel and remember how God met you in the middle of nowhere. Because remember, Jacob is in a place that he's never been before, heading to a place he's never been before, in the middle of nowhere, when God appeared to him and blessed him with a dream. I'll read it again. It's verse 16. It says, then Jacob woke up from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. He said, I'm not sure about where I'm going. I'm not sure about where I've been lately, but surely the Lord is in this place. The Lord is, that's present tense, in this place, and I was, that's past tense, not aware of it. Because see, Jacob realized that he was there, and he's still there, and he's here for you today after all you've been through. After all the disappointments, after all the failures, he's still here for you today. And see, what I love about Jacob is that in chapter 28, he's talking about the Lord is in this place, and that's cool, and that's great. But by the time he goes back to Bethel in Genesis 35, it's been 21 years later. He's been blessed in wonderful ways, and God has given him favor, and he protected him, and he kept Jacob. But things ended up going south with Uncle Laban. Long story. Like, Jacob was like, hey, what do I have to do to marry your daughter? And he's like, we'll work 7 years, and we can make that happen. And he works his 7 years, and on the wedding night, Laban gets Jacob real messed up and slips in the other daughter. And he's like, oh, you thought I meant Rachel? I meant Leah. And the Bible basically says that Leah was undesirable. The actual term they use there is wretched. I mean, let's be real here. So Jacob did not want Leah. He wanted Rachel. And so Laban slips in Leah, and then Jacob's like, hey, bro, I thought we had a deal. The trickster got out tricked. He's like, I thought we had a deal. And he's like, oh, I meant Leah. But if you want Rachel, you can work another 7 years, and we can make that happen. Weird, right? And so he goes through all these things, and it's been 21 years. 21 years. And Laban actually sets out to try to kill Jacob. He pursues Jacob to try to kill him, but he didn't end up killing him because God appeared to Laban and said, hey, bro, if you're going to touch Jacob, you're going to have to go through me first because I made him a promise. And the same thing applies for you today. If the enemy wants to come mess with your life, he has to go through God first because God made you a promise. And so Jacob ends up getting back. He meets up with Esau. And they start reconciling things, and we don't have time for that story, but that's a great moment of reconciliation, even though it wasn't a perfect reconciliation. which brings us back to Genesis 35. Jacob is 21 years older. He's been tricked by life. He's wrestled with God. It says he's limping. The Bible says his hip is out of socket. He's limping. So the first time he goes to Bethel in Genesis 28, he's running. Running from Esau. When he comes back to Bethel in Genesis 35, he's limping from what he's been through in his life. Because you see, Bethel is a place of what? It's a place of remembrance. But it's also a place of revelation. Because it was there, in the middle of nowhere. And here's the revelation. Jacob goes back to Bethel. He goes back to Bethel, a place where he'd been 21 years earlier, running for his life. He goes back to Bethel. And listen to what it says in Genesis 35 and 3. It says, "Come, let us go up to Bethel, where I will build an altar to God who answered me in the day of my distress and who has been with me wherever I have gone." You see, in Genesis 28, Jacob said the Lord is in this place. But now in Genesis 35, he's journeyed full circle. And he realized that the presence of God wasn't just with me in that place, but it was with me in that place, and in that place, and in that place, and in that place, and that he's been with me wherever I've gone. You see, the presence of God is a person. It's not a place. It's a person. It's portable. That's why Jesus was called Emmanuel, God with us. And see, Jacob said, I see it now. I see it now. My eyes are open. My eyes are open. I've been through some things. I fought some battles. I've had some blessings. But God was with me in the middle of my misery. God was with me in the middle of my sin. And so what happens when God shows up in the middle of nowhere? In the middle of your trouble. It says he's a very present help in the time of trouble. When God shows up in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of hopelessness, in the middle of hurt, in the middle of doctor reports and failed marriages and relational corruption and dysfunction, in the middle of your sleepless nights, in the middle of your heartache, in the middle of your sin, what happens when God shows up in the middle of nowhere? When God shows up in the middle of nowhere, you open your eyes to see that he is now here. He is now here. He's the ever-present, ever-faithful God. And he's here now. So see, you're not alone. You're not alone. You're not by yourself. You're not lost. He shows up in the middle of your nowhere so you can see that he's now here. And I want you to say that out loud. I want you to proclaim that over your life today. He's now here. Y'all say that with me. He's now here. He's now here. He's here now to heal your broken heart. He's here now to fix your broken life, to help you through your transitions, to help you through your troubles. And so go back to Bethel. It's a place of remembrance. It's a place of revelation. But it's also a place of response. It's a place of response. See, the first time Jacob went to Bethel, he was running real good. But the second time he came back to Bethel, he was limping from what he'd been through in his life. See, the first time Jacob went to Bethel, he was making deals with God. He's negotiating. See, I told you about the dream that he had, but I didn't tell you about the vow that he made. Because see, after God appeared to Jacob the first time he went to Bethel, it says, "Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I will come into my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house, and all that you give me, I will give you a full tenth." He's making a contract with God. He's negotiating. This is what he does. He's a negotiator. He's making deals. I'll show you this one more thing and I'm done. You can go ahead and stand. When he went back to Bethel, limping, blessed but also broken, when he went back to Bethel, It's a little different this time because the second time he went to Bethel, when he went back, it says in Genesis 35 and 14, and Jacob set up a pillar in the place where God had spoken with him. In a pillar of stone, he poured out a drink offering on it and poured oil on it. In verse 15, it says, and he named that place where God talked with him, Bethel. See, the first time, Jacob was doing all the talking. And now he's been through some things. You see, we start off life negotiating the destinations. We start off life negotiating the desires, how things are going to turn out, the way that life is going to be, the way that our kids are going to be, the way that our finances are going to work. And sometimes we get it, and sometimes we don't. And sometimes what we go through to get to the place makes the journey different than we imagined it. And when Jacob goes back to Bethel, it's no longer the place where he's talking to God. It's the place where God talked to him. So Jacob doesn't say a word this time. Not one word. He simply builds an altar in a place called Bethel. And when you and I think of altars, we think of beautiful furniture at the front of a church with like pads so your knees don't get uncomfortable. We can come and pray if you'd like. But in the Old Testament, an altar was a place of sacrifice, where they would put the bull or the goat or the dove, or where they would pour out that drink offering or the lifeblood of the sacrifice for their sin, or a thanks offering to acknowledge the God who had given it all to them. And when it says Jacob built an altar, it represents sacrifice. And in the New Testament, it talks about, in Romans 12, 1, it says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. See, we offer our bodies. We offer our hearts as living sacrifices. It's a response. One version says it is your reasonable response. It's time for you to build an altar in Bethel in your heart today. To take a good look at how far God has brought you from. To go back and remember the blessings. To go back and remember the moments. To go back and remember Bethel. Even with all the questions you have, even with all the concerns, even with all the negotiations that are taking place, to open your eyes and wake up. Because you see, God didn't show up in Bethel when Jacob got there. He was there all along, waiting for Jacob to open his eyes to the presence that was right there in front of him. Because he was there all along. Every hand lifted, every heart open. Will you open your eyes today to the presence of God that's right in front of you? Go back to Bethel in your heart. Build an altar. Let God know that you didn't come to negotiate with him for a better life. You came to give him your life as is. Because see, now my eyes are open and I realize you were there all along. I just couldn't see it. But now I do, so here I am, God. Here I am. Here I am, God. I want to open up this front for all of us to come and pray. God is speaking to some hearts. He's dealing with some people. It's time to go back and remember. It's time to go back and remember and see where God brought you from. It's time to remember the Bethel in your life, where God showed up in the middle of your nowhere, where he made a way, where you didn't think it was possible, but God showed up and made a way.